Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Rondall tags this ball left field. He has done it again. Yes, goes yard, and it's 1-0 Sox. He is feeling better, huh? The legs are good, and if the legs are good, he'll hit home runs. And what he said was, when the legs are good, he can hit the ball in the air. When he hits the ball in the air, he's strong enough to take it out. This was a great sign that he hit it to left field.
He hits a ball high in the air, right center. New ball game, yes, again! His second of the night, third in 2 days.
Jason Benetti, Steve Stone, NBC Sports Chicago, White Sox baseball. Quite the ride yesterday. Yasmani Grandal with two walks in an inning, two homers in a game. And the headline on the piece, Southside Sox by James Spox, said, for the record, Yasmani Grandal doesn't suck. Well, the fact that 670 the score right here in Chicago on Saturday suckage meant we should talk about this. And since James Fox wrote that on June 2nd, Yasmani Grandal has hit three home runs in two games. So we need to welcome to the show James Fox, and Yasmani Grandal owes it all to you, right, James?
Yeah, sure. We can go with that. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on. So you make the point that I think is a and is instructive as baseball moves along to a greater understanding of what players do and don't do and why it benefits it. So he doesn't suck while hitting a ridiculous, so far below the Mendoza line that Mendoza's laughing at him. What were you saying here, and why is it coming to fruition now?
So I mean, the gist of it is that, like, walking a lot is really important. And, I mean, look, he's got the low batting average, and everybody would like to see him hit better. And, you know, I kind of made the argument that he needs to slug. I don't really think the White Sox care what his batting average is. So I feel like we shouldn't either, right? But if his OPS is in the 800s, as I think it's heading that direction, I mean, Steve Stone, you know, talked about it last night on the broadcast a little bit, how he's getting a little bit more healthy. I mean, if he's hitting for power and getting on base at a clip around 400, I mean, that's kind of what they paid for. And, you know, I think we have a tendency to look at the batting average still and see that it's in the 130s and just assume that he's terrible when he just hasn't been. Now, if you don't like that type of player, this is what I've been trying to say. Like, people are totally allowed to, like, not like him or not enjoy watching the way that he plays baseball. But you can't really say that he's bad, because he hasn't been bad. He's been very productive.
Yeah, he's been productive, and he obviously gets on base. I think some people were concerned over him taking or accepting a lot of walks. And ultimately, what he did last night is what I think, James, I think that's the player that White's, because you said they're allowed to not like the type of player he might be. That's the type of player that White Sox fans want Yasmani Grandal to be, the guy who hits the massive home run to tie the game at 8 in the 7th inning. Do you think that that's the type of player Grandal wants to be too, or is he more comfortable? I know that's kind of a silly question, but is he okay just being him and taking walks and doing things like that as well?
No, I think, I mean, the power is part of the profile that they paid for, obviously. I mean, I think he was fine taking the walks because he knew, kind of like Steve Stone said, that he was having issues, like, in his lower half. Mm. And that, like, you know, if he's hitting the ball on the ground, he's not really that valuable, you know? So, he's going to strike out a fair amount, but he walks a ton, and he's, you know, he should hit a pretty good amount of homers, too. So, once he does that, he is really effective. I mean, his batting line is one of the weirdest things, I feel like, that any of us have ever seen, right? Because, I mean, look, it stands out when somebody's hitting in the 140s or whatever he's hitting, you know, and then he's on base still as often as he is. I mean, it's very strange. I mean, I touched on it in the piece that something, you know, you've talked about, the batting average of balls in play is basically just every ball that you put into play, you know, so it doesn't count homers or strikeouts. I mean, it was, I think when I wrote the piece, his BABIP was 127, which, I mean, most players, you know, it normalizes around 300. So that kind of shows just, like, how unlucky he's been. So, you know, some of that success is coming, like, according to some of the advanced metrics. And, you know, we've seen over the last 3 days he's been a lot better in a small sample.
We're talking with James Fox. You can read him at SouthsideSox.com. Speaking of Southside, today is the day the White Sox debut their new City Connect uniforms. I trust you guys, Mark, you and James, saw the jerseys. What did you guys think of them?
So, I mean, I think they're great. I mean, I saw some people had some qualms, I guess, with the South Side being one word. And, you know, you're the journalist, Steve. I don't know if they were, like, trying to use it as an adjective or what. I mean, I kind of like, I think they're really cool. That part didn't bother me, but that was the thing that I saw that some people were upset with, that Southside wasn't two words.
Well, I think the idea is when you make a noun out of it, you get to call it whatever you want. You get to name yourself whatever you want. And I love the Gothic, right? The Gothic font. I love the stripes. The colors are certainly terrific. I love the whole look, and it looks even better when you saw that Cubs ugly, just embarrassing Wrigleyville thing. I do not like the hats that say shy. That's just gotta stop. Mark, we discussed this when the NFL draft was here and is Chi-Town. It's like nobody from Chicago says
that.
Stop sounding, stop this stupid.
Right. It's like shy, and I don't like it when people say Cubbies, like, because, like, I don't know. Like, that's just not really a thing. But I want to get back to the game here, James, and I want to work backwards. What did you think of the way Tony La Russa worked the ninth inning with Garrett Crochet starting the ninth, and then obviously two on and two out, and then in comes your closer, Liam Hendricks? What did you think of that as it was happening last night?
So, I mean, as it was happening, I thought, like, I personally probably would have just started the ninth with Hendricks, but he hasn't really done that all year, so it's not something I was expecting. The Garrett Crochet usage has been a little bit strange, too, and Rick Hahn came out a few days ago kind of saying that they were going to work him back in with, like, one-inning outings, and then his last two outings he's gone multiple innings, so who knows? I mean, that, you know, that's a guy that they're going to need. So, you know, it worked out last night. I didn't have a huge issue with the way they used the bullpen altogether. I mean, I guess you'd like to see Dallas Keuchel continue, possibly, but, I mean, that's easy to say in hindsight when two relievers come in and blow the game. So, I mean, he only had 80 pitches through six. Keuchel hasn't been great the third time through the order, but, I mean, with a six-run lead, you would think he could probably go a little further. But, you know, he got bailed out. I was happy that Tony went to Hendricks, you know, just in general, but I probably would have just done it for the full ninth at home.
I get the feeling we're watching Tony La Russa along with Ethan Katz, or catch up. Tony La Russa is catching up to what Ethan Katz probably already knows about these pitchers and how much they have, how they can stretch them out. What if we need them? What if it's another situation where Hendricks saves three games in 2 days. It crochets the guy, and as he prepared for a five or six out save, and we have a chance to stretch him out, what is he good for? And I wonder if the Keuchel thing is in response. First of all, it was hot and sweaty, and it's going to be that way the rest of the weekend into next week. And I wonder if that's a response to the way La Russa couldn't tell what everyone else knew about Giolito just not having it and being left out there. I don't know if we're watching La Russa's learning curve in action in a game like last night.
No, I think we are. I think that's accurate. I think a lot of people, myself included, didn't think that Tony La Russa would need as much of like a feeling out process as he kind of has. I mean, look, he's been away from the game from the dugout for a long time, right? But he's like the first one to tell everybody that he's been involved in the game this whole time. Like, don't treat this like he's been gone for 10 years. So I kind of just thought, like, you know, like on a nightly basis, like I thought the White Sox would be fine because I thought Tony could do the job, like, you know, from 7 to 10 every night. I thought it would be some of the other stuff. But then, you know, there's been a lot of issues, obviously. But I do think there's some truth to the fact that he has to kind of find out what he has. I mean, Evan Marshall came into the season as a right-handed, like, eighth inning setup guy. He was pretty bad to start the year. I mean, I do think it's reasonable, like, to use him in high-leverage spots because they have to find out, like, are you going to have Evan Marshall down the stretch or are you going to have to trade for an eighth inning guy? So, yeah, some of it's that. You don't want to blow six-run leads. I mean, look, it's not Tony's fault that Cody Hoyer and Evan Marshall gave up runs last night, but it is easy to say, you know, okay, why wouldn't he leave the starter in? And there's probably some truth to the fact that, you know, he left the starter in earlier in the year and everybody was all over him. So if he leaves Keuchel in last night and Keuchel gives up like four runs in that inning, like, you know, he's got to wear that too. So, yeah, I do think it's a feeling out process, but I mean, him and his pitching coach seem to be working together on this stuff, and you see changes, you know, in real time after mistakes. So that part's at least positive.
That's a great point that you made about Keuchel, that because I hadn't really thought about that earlier this year he took all that crap with, I know, the Giolito at one point in time. And so you might be right that it was like, you know what? The Dallas Keuchels look great for six innings and 80 pitches. Let's get them out of there. But it, as you were saying, that seventh inning was absolutely jarring to see a team. Detroit's bad. And to see them come back and score six against Hoyer and Evan Marshall, as you said, and Eric Haas with the big three-run homer coming right after the wave. I don't know what was more disturbing on that play, the wave or the Haas three-run homer. But I guess it did leave the door open for Grandal to hit the home run to tie it, and that brings us all the way to your mean Mercedes, who gets the game-winning hit. What do you and that obviously doesn't solve all of his problems. What have you been thinking about your mean Mercedes, just in a horrible slump, or are we starting to see the your main Mercedes who didn't make it to the big leagues until he was 28 years old?
So I think it's a slump. I mean, I think this is, you know, probably an obvious, like, answer maybe, but he's somewhere in between probably. I mean, there's no way he's the guy that we saw at the beginning of the year because he's probably not an all-star level player, but I do think he can hit, like, in the big leagues. And whether, like, your mean Mercedes, if he's a bench bat for you, like, I think that's a positive, right? This is a 28-year-old minor leaguer, you know, that doesn't really have a position. So if he contributes to a division winner, like, that's a good thing. I don't think he's at a place right now where he should be starting at DH and hitting fifth every day, because you do have, even with the injuries, I mean, they have guys that have played well. I mean, Jake Lamb was a whipping boy early, and myself included on some of that, but he's been really good against right-handed pitching. So, I mean, if a righty's on the mound, he's kind of got to be in the lineup. I love what Tony did today. Grandal's the DH. Like, Grandal has to play against left-handed pitching. He's been so good against lefties, and La Russa has been reluctant to play both catchers at the same time this year. I think this might be the second time all year that he's done it, but it's necessary. So, you know, Yermin has the day off today. I do think he's going to contribute the rest of the way, but it's not going to be where he's, like, you know, carrying your team through the rest of the season waiting for Aloy and Robert to come back.
Well, we shall see. James, we enjoyed the visit. Thank you for joining us today and bringing your insight. We look forward to talking to you throughout what should be a wonderful ride of a summer baseball season. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is James Fox of Southside Sox. SouthsideSox.com.
I have to address a text that I hate, but is spot on, from the 708. Grody, it's Mercedes like a car, not Mercedes. I'm just going to tell you this straight up. I, for whatever reason, I usually am pretty good with names. Like, I pride myself on that, like the journalistic side of me. I have a weakness with your mean Mercedes. I just, like, I'm all over the board with it. I know what it is. It just never goes from my brain to my mouth the proper way. I don't know what it is. Do you have words like that or names like that, Steve? Or is it just, no matter how, you know you're wrong, but it just comes out incorrectly no matter what?
I'm sure I do, and I've not been corrected, or maybe I have, and I've just done it out of spite and said it
right.
That way, because that would be very much like me. So
I'm trying. I want people to know that I'm trying, and it bothers me every time I say Yarmin or Yer. I'm just all over the board with his name.
Yarmin?
Mercedes. It's not that hard, actually.
See,
it really isn't. It's not that difficult of a name at all, but I butcher it.
I love how you, when there's a pleadingness to it, that you go right into Will Ferrell's Alex Trebek. That's right. That's the tone you struck. That's the sound that came out.
All you have to do is say the name. It's your mean Mercedes like the car.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Yerman Mercedes. All right. We're taking a break. Before we do that, we need to do a production meeting on the air. So I would like to do what Mark heard at the top of the next hour, so it has a lot of space, a lot of time.
Before it's a great addition.
And we replay Jed Hoyer's interview with Bruce Levine and David Hall from Inside the Clubhouse earlier today. We'll do that at 1:40. So I want to do What Are You Doing, Wegner, because today's a big day in baseball. We can debate whether it's a baseball movie or not, but it's a big day in baseball. And all I can tell you is this. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. So should we do it that way, Mark Grody? Is that?
Yeah, that sounds great. I like the kind of flip-flopping. Sometimes you got to change things up to keep it fresh.
Right, and we got something that Dave Miska, the master of all knowledge, retweeted that I think is the highest compliment I could pay is this whole thing is good enough to steal. And I stole that line from Rick Talley, the late Tribune columnist. So we'll be back with this kind of nonsense in Saturday Suckage and What Are You Doing, Wegner? Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
What are you doing, Wegner?
Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Well, we're doing this on anniversary in 1985. Ferris Bueller had a day off.
Fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Yeah, indeed. So, John Hughes wrote that classic, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, with a one-sentence pitch to Paramount executive Ned Tanen. I want to do a movie about a kid who takes a day off from school, and that's all I know so far. Now, Hughes wrote the script in 6 days, which is actually about twice as long as it usually took him to write scripts, because he usually did it over a weekend. Everybody who was around him said he was just a maniac in the way he got it done. And that was the way John Hughes worked. And it was set in the town of Shermer, Illinois, which was a street and whatever. And so the role of Cameron was played by Alan Ruck because Emilio Estevez turned it down.
Wow. There's always a story like that. There's always like that, and I'm sure he was happy to take it. And I have no idea how Emilio would have played it, but like that was a great character. A depressed young man who went up against his dad and took out the car.
Bueller?
Yeah, that's it. That's Ben Stein. He was.
What's your
to
favorite? What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite John Hughes film? Is that it?
That's
Ferris Bueller.
It's Ferris Bueller. It's just great. It's something. It because it is. Isn't that every kid's fantasy? Or your fantasy of that as you look back, go, oh, I wish you, oh, yeah, I want to do that. Oh, yeah, I'm going to drive this car out of the dealership and take my friend's dad's car, and I'm going to go to the Cubs game, and I'm going to go to the art museum, and I'm going to fool around with my friends, and that's just what I'm going to do. I'm going to fake sick.
And everybody kind of wanted to be Ferris Bueller, the popular guy. With the hot girlfriend, with all the friends, with the perfect parents, in the nice house, in the nice neighborhood, and taking advantage of all the niceties. Like, yeah, God, I'd like to be that guy.
Bueller?
Yeah. Bueller. Well, they made him say that. John Hughes made him say that because the extras who played the students were laughing so hard when he said that he decided to put him on screen. And by the way, the hot girlfriend, that was
Sloan.
Mia Sara Sloan, yeah, it was played by Mia Sara. That role was offered to Molly Ringwald.
Of course it was.
Apparently the part was not big enough for her, according to reports. So there you go. That's it for item. Let's move on to item number two.
Cool.
This was retweeted by Dave Miska, the master of all knowledge. You know Dave
Miska.
And it comes from Paul Myers, who I did not know. He's the host and producer of the Record Store Day podcast. And he's done other music industry writing. This line is so good. To steal a line from former Tribune columnist Rick Talley, this line is good enough to steal. So Paul Myers tweeted this out. One of the funniest things my wife has ever done. We were walking into a department store that had Beatles music playing on the PA. She turned to me and said loudly for the benefit of everyone to hear, "Hey, this is that band I was telling you about."
No way.
That's just brilliant. And he finishes the tweet, "Reader, I'd marry her again." That's just brilliant, isn't it?
It's adorbs. Yeah.
And you're gonna do that. I'm going to do that. I know I'm going to steal that.
That's pretty good.
This is that.
Wait, so
bad.
How did you? So Miska retweeted it, or how does Miska?
Miska retweeted. I did not know who this guy was, but Miska retweeted it because I follow Miska on Twitter, and whatever Dave's got going on, the master of all knowledge, I certainly want to know it. So that was it, and I thought this is a keeper. This is a keeper. All right, next item. The Lakers got beat by the Suns. It's all over.
They did a
gentleman's sweep, which is a 5-game series. And Snoop Dogg, the president emeritus of the Wake and Bake Club, had something to say about that. And he tweeted out, "Never thought I'd say it, but we sorry, and the Clippers better than us. Frank Vogel can't coach, and why the bleep Montrezl Harrell ain't get no run? Bleep, this is heartbreaking. A hurt more than Mary J. Blige records." He's soft. He's taking everyone down. Lakers lose, and Snoop Dogg is taking everyone down.
I didn't think that, taking down Mary J. Blige, I mean, that's a classic. That strikes me as unnecessary, Snoop.
Yeah. Well, you can tell them at our next Wake and Bake Club meeting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's something I love, this whole idea. The Corpus Christi hooks. We've seen that. We've been at games and we've seen the ceremonial first pitch. And we have no idea. They tell us who these people are, and unless it's a former Cub before a playoff game or something like that. All right, it's just somebody that the advertiser gets a payoff or something like that. This, though, it was Dog Day about a week and a half ago or so, 10 days ago. So what the Corpus Christi Hooks did was they had the ground crew walk out with the grounds dog, whose name is Teal, because, of course, that's one of the team colors. And they had the ceremonial first fetch. And what they did with this retriever was that the grounds crew member walked out from the grounds crew area to the area between pitcher's mound and second base. And the dog is looking. He knows the ball is in the hand of that grounds crew member. And he's waiting, and he's walking with him. And they get out to that spot, and the grounds crew member throws it into center field. And Teal, the grounds dog, goes to fetch it and bring it back. The ceremonial first fetch.
That's great.
Yes, it's really a great video. It's a great clip, and you see players applauding on their gloves as Teal comes back in with the ball and brings it right to where he's supposed to.
And I think they ought to adopt that at the big, like the Cubs. I mean, that's very like minor league creativity, but people love dogs. Try it.
They do.
Yeah.
Right, and they cheer for that. So you know how you can find Translate Tweet at the bottom of some of the tweets?
Sure.
Right? Well, the Montreal Canadiens, they're full service for you. So they last night, they beat the Jets, and this time 1-0. The only goal came from Tyler Toffoli, shorthanded. So the Canadiens tweeted out, and this will help you to seem smarter than you are. Tyler Toffoli, period. That's it, comma. C'est ça le tweet. That's it. In English, that's the tweet in French. C'est ça le tweet.
I was waiting for the translation.
Right. Well, you got it right there. You figured it out. C'est ça le tweet. That's it.
C'est ça le tweet.
I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago MLB closed captioning as a Twitter site.
Uh-huh.
And then I found something I really liked. It was, I have no idea which game this was, but it doesn't matter. And what the closed captioning said was, now Bobby Dimeck gets the basketball and shoots it. It's some kind of major league game.
Bobby Dimeck gets the ball and shoots it.
Yeah, okay. I have no idea.
Wow.
So would you want to go swimming in a pool that was 10 stories up and it was built between two residential skyscraper apartment houses? There's two apartment houses, and this pool is 82 feet long. It is made of an acrylic, so you are looking straight down and straight out in this 82-foot pool, and it's in London, and it connects these two apartments, and you're 10 stories up.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
So it's just hanging there, basically.
It is. It looks like it's just hanging there. If this were a movie, you'd say it's a bridge that's ready to collapse, and we're getting on with the show.
I'm pretty sure that would be a non-starter for me. I don't think I would need to be in that pool. No. Because I know that they would tell you that, oh, this building is safer than your house, or this is the safest structure in the world. But, like, you know, I don't know. I've always had the philosophy where the result of failure is death. Like, I don't do it. Like, if there is to be some sort
of... It's a bad option.
Right. Like, if there's some sort of failure with that pool, you're dead.
Okay, the pool is 10 feet deep. The water alone reportedly weighs around 375 tons. It was lifted into place by a 750-ton mobile crane, which was supported itself by a 50-ton crane. You sure you don't want to go up there? You sure they got it right, like it's a piece of Lego? It really looks like a piece of Lego.
Oh, my God. Would you do it?
No, I had bouts of acrophobia as a child. I might do it if I did it the whole, you know, tiptoe in thing, and just sort of get closer. Do I feel safe? Sort of get
and
closer.
And then get the hell out. Get in and get out.
I might. I'm reminded of an interview, some anniversary of Jaws, and Richard Dreyfuss is saying that the effect that whole thing had on he and Steven Spielberg, that they happened to be at the beach years later, and he said, yeah, I think we got to barely where the waves came into the shore, and we just sort of got some water in our hands and patted our chest with it and said, no, I'm good. I'm going back to the sand.
they freaked themselves out.
Yes,
that's awesome.
Yes, yes. That's it. So
I would be very delicate getting into the pool, too. Like, a pool like that, I'd be very careful. I wouldn't jump in. I wouldn't, like, you know, push my weight down on the floor if it's shallow enough. I'd be very scared, too.
But that makes a difference.
Right. Like, it makes no difference. And there's probably no weight limit or anything like that, but that's the way I would feel.
So often we come to you, we come to What Are You Doing, Wegner, with some police log stuff. I found a police log that I love, not just for the incidents, but the way the police themselves write it. It's in Arcata, California, which is Northern California, and it's along the coast. It's east of Sacramento. And the Arcata, California police log includes such things as this. Timestamp Tuesday, May 4th, 9:40 a.m., a volunteer landscaper emptied out trash cans in the roadway near the Portland Loo of shock and awe until handcuffs limited the use of his upper extremities. I thought that was stylishly done. 1:50 p.m., this is on a police log. I don't know how or why, but it's on the police log. A woman whose car was making a funny noise took it to the muffler shop. I don't get it.
Okay.
5:33 p.m., when his panhandling request was turned down, a man in Northtown got out a knife and started stabbing a tree.
Oh.
He was soon arrested on a warrant.
Oh. I'm glad he was stabbing the tree.
Yeah. 6:34, someone reported that a band performing on a Crescent Way Mexican restaurant's patio was loud, but forgot to mention that it was awesome. This is a police log. I love the way they're approaching this. 8:42, a man refused to depart the outdoor dining area of an L Street restaurant. No, he'd rather stay, argue with patrons, and try to light the grass on fire. That is just so good.
Incredible.
On another day, the entry just says, note to self. When a woman has a restraining order against you, or even when she doesn't, don't invite her to commit lewd acts with you via FaceTime.
Ooh.
I think that's good policy. I think that's excellent policy. In 10:17 one night, a woman at a Plaza Hotel reported that when she looked in the mirror, she didn't look like herself. Oh, also, she thought there were drugs in the hotel. Of course there were. So yep. There you go. I love police logs. All right, that's
those
it.
Those are good, good are finds you? By you. Good. That's
Doing
a good
Wegner.
Addition. Yes.
I love that. I had a this week. The I don't know if you saw it. Did you see the Tony La Russa, the arrest tape, the video of that?
Heard the audio, did not see the video.
Yeah. So there's something else I thought of. Let me run it by you, and you can see if I'm just being hypercritical, if I'm going out of my way to be mean, or okay. If there's something to it. He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosen. Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Hall of Famer.
This guy's like the Michael Jordan of baseball.
Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah, he's like World Series manager, like manager of the year.
I don't watch baseball like that, bro.
Michael Jordan of baseball. Well, last night he tied John McGraw for second most wins in Major League history.
Are those the cops money. Talking, by the way, Stevie?
Yeah, I Brandon Fryer played that, and I thought that was La Russa's line. And La Russa saying, Hall of Famer baseball person, and then the cops saying, well, he's a Michael Jordan of baseball. He's done all this managing, and the other one not being a baseball fan. Oops. But that's exactly what what I wanted to talk about. The tape that was released, the White Sox said, we don't understand the newsworthiness that it was released. And newsworthiness is often a news organization gets its hands on something like that, and so it becomes news, we're releasing it. But it prompted me to wonder about this. We talked about La Russa's, we talked about what he did to Yermín Mercedes. Called him clueless, said he shouldn't have hit Willens Astudillo's 3-0 pitch for a home run, ordered the code red for the Twins to throw at Mercedes, like did nothing to protect his player, which would sound like it's not respecting the game. La Russa was big about playing the respect the game card. La Russa was big about defending steroid users. I don't know how that respects the game as well. But this struck me as for an individual reaching the Hall of Fame is the greatest accomplishment. It is not part of the team accomplishment. You need a team to do it, but it's the greatest individual accomplishment. You're a part of a select group. You're in the Hall of Fame. Is that respecting the game when you're being investigated, pulled over, questioned as potentially committing one of the six societal woes? Kills people, injures people, and you're using your Hall of Fame status as like a get out of DUI free card? Does this sound like the latest hypocrisy or another version of hypocrisy for a guy who's claiming to respect the game? Because that's what I thought. Am I going too far, Mark?
Well, of course it is. You know, to use that frivolously, I suppose, to demote the importance of it to being drunk and driving. Yeah, what you're saying makes sense. But on the other hand, I will say this, desperate times calls for desperate measures that any of us are in trouble, we are going to pull every single card we have out of our pockets until we're stripped down naked and to try to get out of something horrible. And that's where Tony La Russa was. And remember, he was drunk, so he demoted the importance.
Sorry, guys, interrupt, but we do have a caller who wants to add to the suckage.
That's our breaking phone sounder. So, Brandon Fryer, our producer, why don't you introduce this caller?
Yes, we have Jordan in Libertyville.
Jordan, welcome to the Score. Thanks for...
How's it going?
Breaking caller. Great. What's on your mind, Jordan?
Oh, good. So here's the thing that never gets brought up with Tony La Russa. He was managing a team when Josh Hancock, you know, got in a DUI accident, killed himself, and he still has the audacity to drive drunk. And not to mention, this is in 1978. There's Uber, there's Lyft, there's a million other options to drive home. So, I mean, this guy is just, in my opinion, is deplorable.
He's certainly hypocritical, and I know what Mark's saying. Thanks for the call, Jordan. I had not thought of that, but there was certainly there's a lot of parts of Tony La Russa that sound more sanctimonious than sensible. And the point about being desperate times call for desperate measures. Yeah, Mark, I think that's a big part of that. But still, if you were respecting the game, you wouldn't be desperate enough to use the Hall of Fame status as a get out of drunk driving free card.
Yeah, and as for the caller is spot on. Like, there are so many easy ways to, more now than ever, to avoid drinking and driving with Uber. Usually what this means, and I'm not saying that this is the case with Tony La Russa, but one could suspect. But in general, when one gets a DUI, it usually means that they've gotten away with drinking and driving 100 times before that. That's probably part of their playbook. And then you stop doing it, hopefully, once you get caught. So that's the answer to that. People think they can get away with it because they do get away with it until they don't get away with it.
Right. And it works every time but one. So the by the way, I mentioned Astudillo who pitched last night. The Twins lost 13-5. So he did not give up a hit on a 3-0 homer. I mean, he did not give up a homer on a 3-0 pitch. So La Russa does not have to order the Twins to throw at any Royals players. just so you know, there were no. Apparently, the Royals don't have any clueless players, and maybe he didn't throw anything close on 3-0. And by the way, as an old friend alert, this may sound familiar to what you watch, Mark. Tyler Chatwood became the first reliever in Blue Jays history to allow 6 hits without recording an out.
Way to go, Tyler!
Yeah.
I'd forgotten he was on the Blue Jays. I'm glad I got that update.
Old friend alert. So the we started a show a couple weeks ago with the breaking news that there was not a no-hitter thrown in baseball. There almost was last night.
Almost.
Freddy
there was
Peralta.
A Peralta in effect, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Right. He was 5 outs from a no-no against the Diamondbacks. I didn't know this, but it was his birthday, Friday.
I think I read that on Twitter. Yeah.
You're right. He was trying to throw. He would have been just the second pitcher to throw a no-hitter on his birthday. Have
the
any idea
being...
who remains the only one now? This is quite a thing. This is when you go down rabbit holes. This is what happens.
Roy Halladay.
Okay, George Mullen, the legendary George Mullen. He did it on his 32nd birthday. His birthday is the 4th of July.
Oh my God!
He was born Yankee Doodle Dandy. We
what
thought
a day.
It was just Dave Rigetti, but no. George Mullen, born on the 4th of July, in 1880, he threw that no-hitter in 1912. Born on the 4th of July.
When did this become less Grobstein show? What are we doing
it's just
here?
Because it's baseball. When it happens, like, oh, we have to go all the way back there. And he no-hit the St. Louis Browns, part of a doubleheader on his birthday. Ladies and gentlemen, George Mullen pitching for the Detroit Tigers.
Oh, my God. How about that? Yeah. The St. Louis Browns.
Do you know, by the way, again, another rabbit hole. Sometimes you just end up with this, and Joe West set the record for games umpired, and he did it in Chicago, and 53, 75 games. Stories were told about Joe West. David Freese said, early in my career, I walked up to home plate and didn't say hi to Joe West. He waited for Arroyo to start his windup. Time, he calls. He looked up at me and said, I don't know what part of the country you're from, but you say hi to me your first at bat. Play ball. We were friends for the next 10 years. That was Joe West. You say hi to me, mister.
Let me tell you about Joe West.
Yeah. Do you know the record he broke? He broke Bill Clem's record. Bill Clem's a Hall of Fame umpire. Do you know what his nickname is?
What's his name? Phil Clem?
Bill Clem. Bill Clem.
Clemmer?
His nickname is Catfish.
Of course. He
specifically, his lips made him look like a catfish. And if you wanted to get kicked out of a game, you just yelled out, Catfish.
That sucks.
In fact, he was so sensitive to it. Bill Clem once kicked out a player who was drawing a picture of a catfish with his foot in the infield dirt. And if you think Joe West was the show, listen to what Bill Clem did. On October 1st, 1914, in response to name-calling from the New York Giants bench, he threw out everyone on the bench. All 24 players.
I'll give you fish lips.
Right.
Get out of here.
You know, that's something for Joe West to aspire to. And this, tell me this doesn't sound like Joe West. Bill Clem's quotes sound like they could have come from Joe West easily, like, it ain't nothing till I call it.
Oh, that's great.
But here's why you should know this man. He umpired the first All-Star game, the one at Chicago's Comiskey Park in 1933.
Okay.
He is credited with developing the inside chest protector.
Oh.
Although he claims it was the work of others. He will claim credit for teaching umpires to work the slot, which he claimed gave umpires a better look at the strike zone by looking between the catcher and the batter. That's the slot. And he was the one who developed a system for arm and hand signals, safe, out, strike, fair, or foul, because he thought that the guys in the bleachers should be able to see what his quote was: the guy in a 25-cent bleacher seat is as much entitled to know a call as the guy in the boxes. He can see my arm signal even if he can't hear my voice.
This is old fish face still you're talking about.
This is Bill Clem. Is Bill Clem. He's legendary. And this was the best story I found. And it was attributed to him. It might be apocryphal. It might not. I want to believe this is true. He called out a batter on strikes. The batter believed he was wrong. Uh-huh. The batter flung his bat straight up in the air. And Bill Clem looked at him and said, "Son, if that bat comes down, you're out of the game."
I was hoping for another fish reference.
Yeah,
he puckered his lips up and started smacking them back and forth. And I said, get your ass out of this game.
Right. That bat comes down, you're out of the game. So that's Bill Catfish.
Baseball is fun. That's very funny. That's very funny.
All right. We will get to now. We'll take a break when we come back. It's time for What Mark Heard. Can you tease us? There is
some Ozzie Guillen audio. Here's the tease. He called out the White Sox media last night, and I have to play something that Ozzie said the night before that left me sitting in my place by myself, actually laughing out loud. It's so funny.
I want you to hear it.
And then I got some Bears, because did you know I had Marty Morningweg on my show last night? I had the ex-Detroit Lions coach, longtime coordinator. He was on last night with me, and he was just delightful. And I'll tell you what he said about Justin Fields and the Bears and much more coming up on this hot edition of What Mark Heard.
I'm looking forward to that. And I want to say that we have texters here, the 224 texter, who brought us right back down to Saturday Suckage. Remember that pool we were talking about? Strung across two London skyscrapers?
Sure I do.
Imagine the pride of the first guy to pee in that pool. That was the next. We're so proud. We're so proud. It's Saturday Suckage, like it ought to be. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.